Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better. Even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing.
And make your business sizzle.
Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing. Online marketing. Social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
Hey, peeps, I am uber excited. I've got a great guy that I happen to know personally who runs a company called I Have a Bean, some of the best coffee out there. And we're not going to use the S word in this particular podcast, but we are going to use the B word, bacon. And his name is Pete Leonard. And Pete, man, how are you doing today?
I am doing just fine, sir. Thank you very much.
Awesome, man. Well, it's great to talk with you. And Pete's got a great story. And that's why I wanted to bring him on, because, you know, during this holiday season, it's always nice to hear good feel stories about business. So that's what we're here to talk about today. So Pete, let's get our people to know you a little better. And I want to talk about your origin story. So kind of how did you go from being a bean counter at Arthur Anderson to roasting your own beans at I Have a Bean?
Well, thanks for the question, Brian. It's a pretty simple and short. I went to Brazil and I saw somebody roasting coffee over an open fire. And I thought, I could do that. I'll need to invent a coffee roasting machine to do that back in the States, but I think I can figure this out. And came back to the States and built my first roasting machine that ran in my Weber gas grill and started roasting coffee. And one thing led to another, and before long, my neighbors were offering me money for my freshly roasted coffee beans. One thing led to another, and there you have, I Have a Bean.
That is perfect for short, and that's right to the point. So, but there is a second part to this story, and this is the really interesting part. It turned into a philanthropic adventure for you. So the real name of the company is Second Chance Coffee, and I Have a Bean is kind of the brand. That's the outward-facing one that you actually sell. So tell me the story behind Second Chance Coffee.
Second Chance Coffee Company, we started that business in 2007, June of 2007. And I started that business because after I got back from my trip to Brazil, I had another company. I had a software company, and I needed some help writing some software for a project that we were doing in Switzerland, believe it or not. And I'm talking a really small company. So this is after Arthur Anderson. I had left the company and started my own business, and I needed a certain skill set. And the skill set that I needed was embodied by a relative of mine. But I couldn't get him because he had another full-time job, and we were really only talking about some part-time, you know, short-term work. And I was considering this and pondering how we're going to do this. And I came home from work one day and I went upstairs with my wife. We watched Channel 7 News here in Chicago, and her brother was the lead story on the news. He had been arrested and was in jail out of state. This is the same guy that had the skill set that I needed for this project. Now, that was really bad news for him, bad news for our family, but it turned out to be good news in a way. He got fired from the job that he had when the story ran, which meant once he posted bail, he was free to work for me. So I hired him, and we worked on the project. We delivered the software, and it took about a year to make that happen. And it took about a year for him to go to trial, and then he got convicted and put in prison. And when he went to prison, he was doing such good work for me that I had to hire four other people to replace him to do the level of work that he had been doing.
Wow.
So he got out of prison a number of months later. And first thing he did, of course, is he gave me a call. Hey, I'm out. Can I come back to work? I said, well, sure thing. And brought him back on staff. And, you know, we were using an outside payroll processing company at the time. And the first payroll that came up with him on it, I had them run payroll. And I got a call from the president of that company that day. And he says, hey, Pete, this is Jeff at your payroll processing company. Listen, something came up that we think you're going to want to be aware of. You have a convicted felon on your payroll. And I looked at the phone. I said, what? What are you talking about? And of course, I'm being very facetious here. And but he's all serious. He says, yeah, I knew you were going to want to know this. I said, Jeff, I know. What? You know you have a convicted felon on your payroll? Yeah, I do. You just can't do that. I said, Jeff, last time I checked, this is my company, and I'm pretty sure I can hire anybody I want. Mm-hmm. And his response was interesting. He said, yeah, yes, it is your company, but no, you cannot hire anybody you want. And I said, what? And he said, no. He said, remember, Pete, we have this arrangement. Your employees are not really your employees. They work for you. You pay them. But they're really my employees of record, because you get group health insurance at the same rate that you are getting at Arthur Anderson. And you get that because I've got 200 other small businesses whose employees are my employee of record. And that way I can go to the insurance company and present, hey, I've got 12,000 employees. I get better rates. That's how come you get the insurance rate you get. So they're not your employees, Pete, and we don't hire felons. You got to get rid of them. And I said, I can't really do that. If I go home tonight and tell my wife that I fired her brother, she's not going to be real happy with me. And he said, I don't care who he is. He's got to go, because we're not just processing your payroll. We hold your business insurance and, of course, your group health insurance. And we're going to drop all of that if he's not fired by the end of the day. That sounds serious, Jeff. He said, yeah, pretty much you're out of business unless you do this. So I called my brother-in-law into the office, explained things. We came up with a plan, and I called Jeff back and I told him, okay, he's fired. Go ahead and take him off the employee list roles. And he said, okay, good deal. We're still going. And then my brother-in-law went to the state of Illinois, formed his own corporation, and my company contracted with his company so he could keep working, but not as an employee. So that's how we got around that issue. That's kind of the nut of this thing, where I first started to understand that people coming out of prison have it different than the rest of us do. Yep, they committed a crime, but in theory, they've done their time, they've paid for that. But we in society tend to want to keep them away and back and down and not here and all those kind of things. That it just got me woken up to start looking at this issue. And I learned about recidivism and, you know, just how big the whole issue is across the U.S. And that was the beginning of the social part of things. But so some period of time went by, and I got a call one day out of the blue. He said, hey, Pete, it's Rick. I need to come back to work. I'm out of money now and I need to work. I said, well, that's great. But in the time you've been gone, I merged this company with another company. And then that company got bought by another company, and I own about 1.5% of what's left. So I don't really have influence on hiring and firing anymore. But I tell you what, we always need people with your skill set. So send me your resume. I'll give it to HR and we'll see what happens. So he did, I did, and they loved the resume. Wow, this guy's got all the skills we need. You know, they're listing off all the programming languages that he knows. Let's bring him in for an interview. So they did. They loved him in the interview. He's a bit nerdy, but he's a programmer. He's supposed to be that way.
Right.
So they handed him the application, said, here, fill this out and let's get going. So he sat there and filled it out right then.
And except he gave for that one checkbox, right?
you know it. Right? Yep. Checkbox. And I remember to this day, Brian, watching her read that application of his, and her eyes stopped dead on that box as she was reading down the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked at that. She looked up at him. She looked back at the application, and then she looked at him, and she said, "Well, thanks for coming in." She turned the paper face down. "We're going to have to go in a different direction." And that was the end of it. And I thought, what? That's not right. We need this guy, the skill set that he's got, and you're not even asking a question about why he checked that box. You're just saying, "See you later."
Right.
And that just didn't seem right. So I watched him go through a process very similar to that with a dozen other companies, none of whom would hire him in spite of the dramatic skill set that he had. And that was really the thing that was, you know, more prodding, that was saying, "Hey, Pete, there's a social problem here." And I was thinking, yeah, there is. And somebody should do something about that. that's what I was thinking for a number of months. Somebody should do something about that. And then one day it turned into, "Yeah, dummy, that's you, Pete.
Right.
You need to do something about this."
So how did you go from that software company to then starting the coffee company and then turning it into this opportunity farm, I'd like to call it, for convicted felons? I mean, what all of a sudden happened from that point?
Remember the trip I took to Brazil?
Mm-hmm.
I saw somebody roasting coffee, and I designed and built my own coffee roasting machine that ran in my Weber gas grill. And I was roasting coffee in my grill every Saturday, and my neighbors were starting to buy my coffee. Well, because my brother-in-law had gone to prison and had gotten out, I got connected with a group that's local to my community. That's I would call them a halfway house. It's a place for men coming out of prison to live while they learn how to live in society. So it's kind of rehabilitation, it's counseling, that kind of thing, computer skills training, you name it. And I talked to the founder of that halfway house system. It's called Koinonia House National Ministries, by the way. And I asked him, "So what's the biggest issue that your guys have that are going through Koinonia House and the program?" And he said, "Well, Pete, it's employment. They can't find work. They know how to work. They want to work. They're desperate to work. They have skills that they could apply to lots of different things in work. But people seem to be afraid to hire somebody because they've been in prison." I've heard this story before. This sounds a lot like my brother-in-law. And I thought, well, if they can't find work outside of a halfway house, what if they worked inside a halfway house? What if they had their own company and they could employ themselves? Well, what would they be doing? And then I'm thinking, well, I'm at home roasting coffee in my grill. That's pretty simple. What if we taught them how to roast coffee and all the other skills you need to run a small business, administration and finance and sales and marketing and all those things? We could teach that. They can employ themselves. They can produce a product that people want to buy. And we could call it Second Chance Coffee Company, because that's what they're getting, is a second chance. Well, that sounded like a great idea. So formed a corporation, Second Chance Coffee Company, and wrote our first of a couple of dozen business plans to try and figure out how on earth do we start a company that really is a social mission business, but it's a business in that it's not a not-for-profit. It's a for-profit company selling product that people want to buy because it's a great product, not just because we have a great social mission.
Gotcha. Well, and you know, in the world of for-profit, non-profit, I mean, there's, you know, obviously tax designations of a 501c6, 501c3, and stuff like that.
Yep.
You know, but ultimately, the bottom line is a non-profit is there to help society in most cases, which essentially you've done with a for-profit business. So by giving these gentlemen, and maybe ladies, I don't know.
Ladies too.
Yep, the second chance opportunity. What in your mind has been, let me ask you first, what is the biggest impact that you've seen from it? And how is that getting paid forward? But then there's a part two to that question. And what's the biggest impact it's had on you?
Great questions. Okay, so what is the impact that we've seen? So first of all, we in 2007, when we had the idea to form the company, I realized that we really couldn't roast coffee in a grill. We needed a roasting system that was commercial scale, because you can't roast enough coffee in your grill, roasting 24/7 to roast enough beans to make enough money to have a financial impact. So that's one of the things the business plan told us. So, all right, we need a roasting system that is commercial. And then we learned it also takes 2 years to learn how to roast coffee. And if you're in a halfway house, you're only there for 8 or 9 months. You're not there 2 years. So we not only need a commercial scale roasting system, we need one that you can use like right away. And there wasn't one on the market, so we designed and built our own. And it took us 2 years to design and build it. And I mean design, write the software, weld it together. And we now call it the Beanmaster 5000. And it's in the back room roasting right now. Well, we did that. 2009 is when we started roasting. Since then, so our first employee in 2009, his name was James. And since James, we've hired more than 50 post-prison people to work here, men Wow. and women. Yeah. And that alone is a great thing. What I get to see in the people that work here, almost every case is complete life transformation. And I mean in the way that they see themselves, in the way society sees them, because they're producing product rated in the top 1% for quality. And the people doing this, producing such great quality product, unfortunately, they're seen by most of society as being in the bottom 1% from a human quality standpoint. But since they're producing such high quality work, we're starting to change the perception of other businesses about whether it's viable to hire a post-prison person or not. And I've been approached by half a dozen businesses just over this last year and a half who have remarked, literally, Pete, your product is really good, and I can't believe this is only being done by post-prison people. Can we talk to you about hiring post-prison people? How do we do that? Well, that's a huge thing, because I Have a Bean is never going to be big enough to hire all of the post-prison people that want to work across the U.S. We just can't. So we're starting to realize that what we have to do is influence other businesses to do what we're doing. They don't have to change their whole business model or that kind of thing, but really just ignore the box. I don't care if people check the box or not. At some point, every business interview, they can still ask the question, have you ever been convicted of a felony? That question is still legit to ask. But that doesn't disqualify somebody from being a great employee who can produce great product, great output, great service, all those things. I have found, by and large, post-prison people are desperate to work and to prove themselves to other people and to themselves. So life transformation, Brian, there's no magic here. We just treat people the way that we want to be treated. That's all there is to it. I expect them to come to work on time, to do their job well, to give it everything they've got. And in return, they get gainful employment, they get trust. Interestingly, every single person who works for me on a full-time basis, they have the same key to this building that I do, this building being our roasting plant. They have the same access that I do. I trust them. And in fact, while I'm talking to you, who's running my company? Felons are running my company, and they're doing a great job of it.
So back to the other question that I asked you, what is the biggest impact that it's had on you?
Before I started this company and you know, I didn't know any post-prison people other than my brother-in-law once he became post-prison, once he became a felon. Like what I charge most of society with being as uncaring and seeing post-prison people as being in the bottom 1%, I was in that same boat. But now that I have had so many friends who are post-prison people, that has changed completely. And even to the point where it doesn't matter to me what the crime was that you committed. It doesn't matter. I'm not afraid of people, not afraid of your past. I'm much more interested in who are you today. And I've realized this. I don't really want to be known for my past either. Certainly not the worst things I've done. I'd much rather be known for the content, the present content of my character. How am I living today? And that's a grace that I want extended to me. So I actively extend it to other people. And that's a big difference from how I used to be.
Okay, so this may be a little bit of a tougher question, but I want to get it in before we finish. And that is, have you ever been disappointed by some of the people that you've hired?
Have I ever been disappointed by some of the people that I've hired? I have. I'll preface that with this. We track something called the recidivism rate. And that is, when somebody gets out of prison, they're very likely to go back into prison within a 3-year period. Illinois has one of the highest recidivism rates in the country. It stands right around 50%. Okay, that's a bad thing. In fact, that costs the state of Illinois over $1 billion every year, people going back to prison. At our company, at I Have a Bean, we track that recidivism rate, and we have had people go back to prison, not while they're working here, but that recidivism rate for us is less than 4%. So what does that mean? Two people have disappointed me because they went back to prison after they had a second chance to work here. But that's a much lower rate than the general population, believe it or not. So I end up having a lot less risk hiring post-prison people than most businesses have, hiring people that they don't know whether they've been to prison or not, but usually have not.
See, that's well put. And that's something that I think that has to be taken into account, because, you know, there's always that fear factor in there. But the bottom line is you've proven the model, you've done it, and it works. And, you know, God bless you for, you know, taking that chance on those people, but also making a difference in so many different lives. So thanks for doing that, man.
You bet. It's my pleasure to do it.
So with that being said, I'm sure people are going to want to learn more about you and the coffee and your story and stuff like that. So what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, the best way, I'm going to tell you this, go to our website at ihaveabean.com. You can do two really key things there. The most key thing is buy our coffee. It comes from all over the world. It's all rated in the top 1%. We roast it here. And you're going to learn two really key things there. There's a video. We've got a stack of videos on our homepage. The one that's at the top of the stack in the lower right-hand corner of that page was done by Seattle Pacific University just last summer. It really gets to the core, the heart of who we are, what we do, and why we do it. And you get to hear stories of three of our employees by watching that video. It's incredibly well done. Two, you're going to see that we right now, we have a FedEx Air Anywhere shipping deal. If you live in Honolulu, you can order 4 pounds of our coffee. We will ship it overnight to you for free. Those are the key things you're going to get.
Well, Pete, this has been great, man. If people wanted to get a hold of you or follow you online, what's the best way for them to connect up with you personally?
So our Twitter is at I Have a Bean, and that's usually me posting all that stuff. I'm on LinkedIn, Pete Leonard. And of course, our Facebook page is also I Have a Bean. What do you know about that? To get to me personally, send an email to info@ihaveabean.com.
Gotcha. All right, Pete, man. Well, this has been a pleasure. I know you well, but I just wanted to share your story with my peeps. It's inspirational. And it just goes to show that, you know, good things can come out of bad situations if just people have the fortitude, the attitude, and the guts to try. So, man, that's awesome. And I appreciate you dropping some incredibly hot, sizzling bacon knowledge bombs on my peeps, man. So thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Brian.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.